what I was learning from the podcast and interviewing these people and everything we had in the app was definitely following this idea of asking a big question and then asking a question on top of that to clarify and probe around these assumptions and stuff like that. And essentially the easiest way to describe it is ask one question, but continue until you get past the surface to the root cause.
Mark Champagne is one rad human being and someone that I connected with immediately over our shared love of podcasts and asking questions. Mark is a podcast host, a mental fitness strategist, and most recently, an author. He is the ultimate lover of questions and going beyond surface level conversation, not just with other people, but within oneself. Welcome to The Safe Haven. I'm your host, Amanda Lytle. The Safe Haven offers a collection of conversations about life's challenges and the pivots we make in order to keep moving forward. In the conversation with Mark today, he and I discuss his transitions between hosting a top-ranked podcast called Behind the Human and the co-creation of a journaling app, Kyo, which reached 86.9 million people, and into his latest endeavor as an author. Mark's love of questions has been deeply laced throughout his being as he's studied mental fitness practices for the past decade and into his work as a strategist, podcast host, and speaker. As Mark says, we all ask questions, but are they the right ones, the best ones, and are we asking enough of them? We jump into the conversation today after I've asked Mark to tell me about a major life pivot.
Life pivot. I mean, probably the biggest pivot that I can think about, and that's like really set me off on this path, has been going from what felt like a very secure and safe job in the corporate world and brand management and marketing and all of that, and you know, being in a place that I really enjoyed the people I was working with and everything was going well and like a typical track. But then having this gut feeling of, I would regret not trying this new idea that I had. And that new idea was related to a digital journaling app, Kyo. And, you know, for anyone that knew me or that I was working with, like that idea seemed to be from complete left field. But for me, it wasn't, because for the 10 years that I was in that industry, I was always getting up a bit earlier in the morning and I was, you know, reading positive things and learning and exploring with all of these different wellness practices and specifically reflection or journaling. So, it was kind of like a 10-year journey of trying all these different approaches and finally getting to the point of being frustrated what existed in the market and thinking there's got to be a better way to do this. And then that was the oh shit moment. The oh shit moment was at a conference in Montreal. I was there for my day job essentially. And my brother-in-law attended as well, who was the co-founder of this app with me. And we're sitting there in between sessions. We're talking about it because we were pitching the app to people that were at the conference. And I was still attending it for the company as well. And whatever, we're kind of multitasking, or I was at least. And the feedback was good and it was going really well. And then all of a sudden, Snoop Dogg and Martha Stewart walked by together.
No way.
And they were the keynote speakers. And they were just going in business together to launch like one of his marijuana products or something, and some sort of cooking with her, like crazy partnership, obviously. And I remember they walked by. And my brother-in-law said, he's like, you know what? Why don't you just come join my company full time and you leave your day job, but then 80% of your time will be to launch this new business in this app. And you can help me with some of the other things that he was doing on the marketing side. But we always joke that he said, you know, it was really Martha Stewart and Snoop Dogg that inspired that question. So that was the big oh shit moment to start off. What has been the last 5 years of an entrepreneurial journey, and I never in a million years thought that I would be on this track.
Backing up to the corporate world, what was it that you were doing in corporate?
I was doing brand plans and marketing plans in the pharmaceutical world.
Okay, so did that feel like a natural transition at all to jump in with your brother-in-law?
Well, the only thing that felt really natural is that we really got along and we've always been interested in a lot of the same things. And the reason I emailed him was because I knew no one in any type of technology field, except for him, who was running an IT company, not a development company. And we joke about that as well, because I mean, you know, his background in IT had kind of really no significance to us trying to figure out how to develop an app. But, you know, we both really, you know, enjoyed each other's company and trusted each other and stuff like that. And, you know, he was an entrepreneur, you mm-hmm. know, since the age of 15, actually. So there was that element of, okay, well, you know, there's some experience on that front. The part that felt comfortable to me was that I was leaving that job with a pretty clear plan forward and knowing that I could rely on my skills around like creating a really integrated brand plan that I was doing for these like $100 million products mm-hmm. and deploy that into this brand new app and actually put a brand plan together before the app was even close to launching.
Mm-hmm. I'm throwing something at you at a left field. Give me the app pitch.
Oh man, it's been a while. So yeah, I mean, Kios, the quickest pitch was Kios was an app to help people start a journaling practice or upgrade whatever practice they had. And it was a guided approach, just like what you can imagine now with like Headspace and Calm, where they really guide you through meditations. There was nothing at that time that would do that for journaling. There are just blank apps that you would just write. But in our case, we wanted to bring powerful reflective questions to help start the process. So that's what that app was. And the biggest thing, and this, I really believe this is what led us to reaching so many people with it, was that, again, using that past experience in the brand planning world, for the first 6 or 7 months before even releasing anything, I was networking with people that we could collaborate with for content and their questions. So we were bringing in experts like Adam Grant for behavioral psychology and questions people can ask to get better feedback at work, or linking up with Lego and someone over there providing their questions, and LinkedIn and all these different brands and companies and experts, so that we had our own content in the app, but there was probably 15%. The rest was from all these other people. And my pitch to them was always, I'm doing this with a whole bunch of different experts in different spaces. And if people want to go further in that experience, they link out to your work. We just want to get people started in this process and show them that, you know, these practices are accessible in relation to you as the strategist, or you as a chef, or you as a developer, not just yoga instructors and meditation coaches, because mm-hmm. that's what all the content was for a lot of the other apps. So that was the difference.
Yeah. Okay. And then I know just the number 80 plus million people.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll just let you take that away, because even just digesting 80 million people is a lot. So I'll let you take it from there.
Yeah. I'll never forget that mm-hmm. number, 86.9 million people. That number represents the number of app store impressions that we received with mm-hmm. the app. Meaning, you know, the easiest way I can represent that is if you're walking in an airport and you glance at the magazine rack and you look at the cover, that's an impression. Mm-hmm. So we had that. And then we also had, you know, significant downloads to go with that. And we had a pretty sizable audience or community, I should say. And it was crazy. I mean, there were no benchmarks for us because we've never done this before. And when it started happening, which was Apple was featuring the app as new apps we love, or app of the day, or we get featured on these journaling lists, it started in a couple countries and then it started snowballing. And we were definitely featured in over 100 countries at one point. Mm-hmm. And we had no idea how or what was happening. Like, there was no communication. It was just someone lived in the UK and be like, I just saw your app, it's number 3 on this list. I'm like, oh, send me a mm-hmm. screenshot. I want to like save yeah. that. We saw the numbers flying up, but we didn't, like, it wasn't like there was an Apple editor reaching out saying, like, hey, we're going to feature you, blah, blah, blah. Except for the US. That was the only country that actually reached out. And we did this, you know, gave them all these graphics. And I don't even think they ended up featuring us off of those graphics. Eventually mm-hmm. they did. So yeah, so we reached all those people. It was a wild experience that, again, I think, you know, Apple, the editors or the reviewers saw the design of the app, which at the time was very Apple-ish. We spent a lot of time making sure that the design was beautiful and it was something that we would want to use. It was functional as well, obviously. But then again, like, there were big names and big brands right away in terms of the content that was in there. So for a brand new company or brand new app, it seemed like we were borrowing credibility from all these other people. And, you know, it's interesting, as my book is very similar to that, right? So it's like, mm-hmm. the journey has continued. But the through line is, again, just helping people find really powerful questions and meet them where they're at in their lives right now.
Mm-hmm. Right? Fantastic, beautiful segue into what I was hoping I would ask you next, which is what the question was that you were asking yourself, the most important question, and I call it your mirror moment.
Yeah, the mirror moment. Well, so just to give some context to the listeners, so we reached a lot of people, mm-hmm. which was great. There were a lot of hypes, a lot of features, a lot of collaborations, but that didn't mean the business was actually working. And, you know, we had many issues there to make sure that, you know, people that were all those millions of people that were seeing the app, that they were coming in, that they were staying, that they were then subscribing to the premium content. That was our revenue model. And that needed a lot of work. And, you know, we spent a lot of money, a lot of time looking for the right developers to help us do that, went through many development teams and so forth, and finally got to a local team that, you know, was significantly higher price and that was going to help us based on some recent user research data that we had gathered or interviews that we had done. So we had a very clear plan forward, but what we didn't have was the cash to continue. Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, a typical story, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I think most importantly, the mental capacity to continue. And that was really hard because, you know, I'll never forget sitting in this co-working space in Toronto, looking at that Apple dashboard and seeing the 86.9 million people. My next step was to hit delete from App Store. And a whole flurry of questions then came in, like, how could we have failed at such a colossal level? Mm-hmm. Like, what would all my ex-colleagues think? Because I remember telling them about this idea and leaving, and everyone's so excited. And there was this element of, oh, I have an idea like that too. You're so courageous to go mm-hmm. do it. Mm-hmm. Well, and now what do I say, right? I just spent the last 3 years of my life doing this. And from the outside, you see all this hype and all these media impressions and whatnot. I mean, it looks like everything's going really well. So people, mm-hmm. at least I thought people were going to really judge the scenario or situation. And the hardest thing, having gone through that experience, you know, I realized, and this is a good thing, but I realized that this is the kind of work that I really want to devote my energy towards moving forward, which meant my backup plan of going back to that past industry just didn't fit anymore. Mm-hmm. So that all of a sudden just left me, and this is where the broken mirror part comes in, mm-hmm. left me feeling essentially physically ill during that time because I had no plan forward. We were really hit significantly financially from this, keeping this afloat. We were living in a city that we couldn't afford anymore and in an area that was always supposed to be, or in a house rental that was always supposed to be temporary. Mm-hmm. And I have no job and no plan forward. So, I mean, it was just crippling fear for definitely a couple of weeks of just feeling shattered, essentially. Mm-hmm. And that's that point of like looking in the mirror in the morning and be like, oh, I don't even recognize this person anymore because I was always very upbeat and motivated and excited and had a plan forward. But then I started just through harnessing the present moment and leveraging the practices that I had learned from, you know, interviewing hundreds of people for the app and the content, realizing that, well, wait a second, all of these people, whether they're Michelin star chefs or, like I said, designers or technologists, like all these different people, they're asking very different set of questions. And they're not questions like, why me? Or what are people going to think? They're questions that are progressive, like, what do I want to do next? Or in my case, the question that really changed for me was, what do I want for my life? Mm-hmm. Because then that opens up, it pauses the narrative that's looping. And it's now we're thinking, okay, well, what do I want for my life? And then, well, then who do I need to speak to help, you know, achieve that? What would an ideal day look like? You know, there was all of these different questions that then sparked from that main core prompt that allowed the hope to come back. That's the big one. You know, there is hope now, like, okay, this is what I'm striving to do. I don't know every single detail, but the hope was back that I have a plan and a vision forward. And that was the realization on how powerful these questions truly are.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that, because I think that part of your story is the most relatable because, you know, so many people have dreams and visions and stuff and yeah, we succeed and whatever, but those moments are the really human ones, the ones where you're like, holy shit, you know, what am I doing? Everyone else was right. You know, the self-doubt, the limiting beliefs come in hard.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was real. Very real.
Super real.
I mean, I give the example that in those times, and in not even times that severe, but especially in that time, like we are all best-selling, New York Times best-selling authors of the internal stories in our mind. Mm-hmm. I mean, even though 99% of those stories don't come to fruition, they feel very real. And that's what was happening. And, you know, you can chalk that up to so many different things in life and work. I mean, we're always predicting the worst case scenario and things that, you know, just are just not justified. But our mind really flips us a really interesting and very believable story that causes, you know, physical reactions.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hey, friends, The Safe Haven will be right back after this quick break. So the courage that you were able to muster in the continuation of your visions and your goals and your dreams, and now kind of fast forwarding into a very exciting fall, tell me all about your book, Personal Socrates.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it is very exciting because it feels different from when starting the app, but also feels very similar in the sense that it's aligned to the work that I want to be doing. And like that, I couldn't feel more clear. Like there's nothing that gets me more excited than talking about this stuff, whether it's in book format or app format or podcast format. I mean, I really don't care because it's the practice of reflection and these questions and using questions and thinking of questions in a different light that just has so much power for anyone, no matter what situation you're in and what's going on in your life, that I just feel like people need to know about this stuff, mm-hmm. right? Or at least try it. So, I mean, what happened was just, again, when I answered that question, what do I want for my life, and started mapping out that plan and doing my own journaling and reflection, I just started thinking about the idea of, well, how can I continue in this space and get this information out there? Again, very similar to the app and also the podcast Behind the Human in a relatable way, mm-hmm. not just, again, I'm harping on yoga instructors and meditation coaches, which I don't want that to come across in that way. But that industry and that world, I mean, you expect this kind of thing. You expect these practices from those people because that's what they're studying. You don't necessarily expect that or expect to be learning from people like Picasso or Kobe Bryant or Maya Angelou, like some of the people that are in the book, or from present day, like James Clear and Ryan Holiday. I mean, there's different perspectives because they're coming at it. Some are writers and some are athletes, right? And some they're chefs. And it's just to go to show that there are moments of reflection in these mental fitness practices that everyone is doing. And if I can bring that to someone on the other side, then maybe one prompt or maybe one person or the situation will land with someone on the other side. And everyone is different. So we'll all start in a different area, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's why the book is set up in mini profiles of 2 to 4 pages for a reason, because the idea is read the introduction in one sitting, but then after that, just open up the table of contents and scan through and stop wherever your intuition tells you to stop. Because that's probably the question you need to be reflecting on mm-hmm. or thinking about. And then from there, you open up a whole beautiful journey of clarity and then living with intention. And then all of a sudden opportunity starts to spark.
Mm-hmm. And having looked through that table of contents for your list of names, how on earth did you come up with those particular people? And how did they make the cut?
Oh, yeah, Amanda, that's a tough question. First of all, the idea was for anyone that's still living and around today, it was important to me that I had interviewed them already and that it wasn't just because, I mean, some of these people are well-known enough that you could probably just do the research and pull from other interviews and stuff. But there was something in me that, like, from an authenticity standpoint, I wanted to draw on the 240 interviews that I had conducted and was continuing to conduct for the podcast. So then I looked at just those names and then, you know, realized that even though like some of them you and I would really know because we're interested in a lot of similar things, but not everyone knows those names. So then I figured, well, there needs to be a subsection of people that no matter who you are, you would recognize mm-hmm. Picasso, mm-hmm. right? Or Kobe Bryant, for example, mm-hmm. or Robin Williams is another one. So then that added another element, because now those are turning into, I have to do the research, and that was fun and hard and just a completely different angle. But again, the idea was, how can I bring a diverse group of people that, you know, you've got a painter, or you've got writers, or you've got entrepreneurs and athletes, chefs and things like that. Like, how can you bring a diverse group of individuals that someone on the other side will for sure relate with at least one to start. And that was the strategy behind that, and why it's structured, and why you see so many different types of people working in different areas of the world, essentially.
Mm-hmm. So this actually makes me very curious about the Socratic method that you mentioned. So for anyone listening, can you tell me about that?
Yeah. So, and there's a backstory to that one, because I was talking to Baron Fig, and it's the company that's publishing the book. And I was explaining the fascination that I had with questions and like what I was writing about. And he just kind of right off the tip of his tongue, he's like, oh, so like the Socratic method. Mm-hmm. And I was like, sure. I mean, I know of Socrates, like most people would just know the name, but that's kind of as far as my knowledge went. I just knew, that's the dude that asked questions and many of them essentially. So, but then I started, and to Joey's credit, or to my credit, he had a minor in philosophy, so I'm sure he, you know, studied Socrates quite extensively. But I dove in, I looked at Socrates and the Socratic method, and quickly realized, like really fast, that, wow, you know, he's bang on, because what I was learning from the podcast and interviewing these people and everything we had in the app was definitely following this idea of asking a big question and then asking a question on top of that to clarify and probe around these assumptions and stuff like that. And essentially the easiest way to describe it is ask one question, but continue until you get past the surface to the root cause. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can apply that to so many different things, health and work and personal and all that stuff. So that was the starting point of really looking into somewhat of a method or a backbone to the book. But what I didn't like was that there were six question types and all these different kind of descriptions and variables of the types of questions Socrates would ask his students. Mm. And it was all very academic focused. And for me, I mean, I can't, without opening the book, I probably can't list out the six question types. I can list a few of them, and that's the problem. So I wanted to take the method that obviously has stood the test of time. It's been around forever, so it works. And we all do this in some capacity. But I wanted to simplify it so that you could really think of it in a few different categories: getting clear, living intentionally, and expanding possibility. And that's how the book is broken out in parts. And it's following the Socratic method in what I'm calling kind of the modernized version that allows it to be really implementable and without you even thinking about those categories, right? That's the key. It's like, because the minute you have to stop and start thinking about principles and concepts, the minute you're not going to use it. For me, I'm just trying to train people to see more questions in their lives and allow them that pause that allows for the question to appear. And that's what, at least my hope for the book is to meet someone on the other side through a story or prompt that, wow, okay, I'm at that area in my life that I can start here. It's only going to take me 10 minutes to read this. Mm-hmm. And I highly encourage throughout the reading, not highly encouraging right now, I do it in the book, but I suggest the moments where the reader should take a pause and flip that script to where they're at in their life so that it's not just consuming and reading knowledge and taking it in, it's actually applying it, right? Yeah. We have this like fascination in our society of like, oh, I want to finish a book a week, or I want to read 100 books this year or something like that, which, I mean, that's fine. You'll probably pick up some things, but you're not really applying that knowledge. It's impossible, right? So if we slow down and really get into it, which is what I was doing 10 years before in those early mornings, taking in the knowledge and then taking those questions that I was seeing in the content and then journaling on it the next day for my own practice. Mm-hmm. So essentially, you know, it's all coming back to that scratch your own itch scenario that basically produced an app and then now is producing a book with the idea of, again, introducing a practice that has been around for thousands of years, but in a way that is accessible in today's world.
And safe.
Yes.
I had written down the safety of the pause, but also the safety of the fact that it's in a written format that people don't have to share what they are, like you said, either consuming or reflecting upon. And when you said pause, I actually underlined that because and you would feel the same way when you are interviewing someone or having a really beautiful conversation with another person, is how powerful the pause is.
It's everything.
Everything.
Yeah.
And how in our own brains, our mind is just going all the time. If you allow your mind to pause, you'll often have an answer appear.
Yeah. The answers are there. The answers are always there. It's just the example I give to draw a physical comparison is like our minds are very similar to, let's think of a room that is jammed floor to ceiling with boxes of books. And like, there's a ton of knowledge in there, but if there's no path and those boxes aren't labeled and you can't see the back of the room, it's very hard to access that information versus something like a library that's organized. And, you know, there's a system set up to access that information. We can do that with our minds, but we have to, just like physically, we have to, you know, physically do exercise to grow our muscles or train for a marathon. We have to do the same thing for our minds. So if we're doing this stuff 10 minutes a day, training our mind to ask questions in those three parts, it's like first get very clear, like the question I was asking, what do I want for my life? Because then I can go and get into the second part of the book, which is designing or living a life of intention, right? Like, okay, well, I want this, so I have to do these things, or these questions will help guide me to some sort of action. And then third step just happens automatically. If you're doing those things day in and day out, now you start seeing opportunity. It's like, that's when the phone calls come in, or you get that email that seems like, wow, like that's out of the blue. Well, it's not really out of the blue. Like you've been kind of working on that in different ways. I'm sure there's serendipity in some of that stuff, but for the most part, there's a reason that those things and those opportunities are showing up. Now you see them and it's a hell yes in the ones that make sense because you're clear, right? And that's possible. We all have access to that. But we don't have access to that in the state that I was in after deleting the app, when you're in a state of survival or fear, because you can't see, it's really hard to make clear decisions in that state of mind because you're in a survival mode. You know, your body is in a survival mode. So, you know, whatever you can do to pause that narrative, and you can deploy gratitude practices to do that, because you can't be grateful and upset at the same time. It's nearly impossible to be in those two states. So you can pause it with some gratitude, right? Even when I was deleting the app at the end, I had to go back to the basics. Like, I'm in a co-working space. There's electricity here. There's great people here. I deleted the app on a laptop that most people in the world don't have access to. I mean, so it just pauses. It pauses the other narrative that was pushing me down.
Yeah, I understand those moments. Yeah, the pause and the gratitude. And something else that you said that I had written down and circled a bazillion times was mental fitness, because I had had, over the last couple of weeks, I've been deep diving into some really cool stuff about childhood and how it plays out in adulthood and all of these things. So that's like what's got me fired up right now. But mental fitness, I love the word fitness, because everyone, when it comes to mental health, I was hearing people use mental health and mental illness and trying to use them interchangeably. And I had to stop them and just be like, pause. No, everyone has mental health. Not everyone has a mental illness.
Yeah.
So you can't use those interchangeably. But what I love about fitness is because then it's like, oh.
Totally.
I love the visual of mental fitness when it comes to having these kinds of conversations that are going to make your mind work.
Yeah. Totally. Well, and it came out of necessity, because when I'd be around trying to drum up those collaborations for the app at that time, and that's not that long ago. I mean, that's 3 years ago, and we've come a long way, thankfully. But the comments I used to get were, oh, you're talking about the 12-year-old girl writing her diary about the boy at school. It's like, that's what you're talking about when you say journaling. I'm like, no, not that there's anything wrong with that, but no, not at all. Actually, I'm talking about the people that you're buying their books or watching their TED Talks and whatnot, like the questions that they're asking and the questions that are fueling huge, you know, businesses and life decisions and stuff. Like, that's what I'm talking about when speaking about journaling, because it's just reflection. The practice is reflection. So I shifted the narrative and started talking about it, you know, as mental. I wouldn't even use the word journaling. So we're going to talk about journaling and reflection. And you nailed it. It was specifically for the idea that people relate to physical fitness. You don't have to sell that idea. And then they link that over, oh, mental fitness, like the workout for your mind. And this is seen as something that I'm taking charge of and I'm deciding to go to the gym for your mind type thing versus all the stigma around mental health and mental illness, right?
Yes.
And that was the other thing. It's like, I see mental fitness as the umbrella and everything. There's a whole bunch of different things that can be under that umbrella, like mental health, mental illness, mental resilience, mental performance. And you know, you pick your category, but I'm trying to show that there are some small things that we can all do that can actually help all of those things.
Mm-hmm. I could talk to you all day about this stuff.
So can I.
When does Personal Socrates come out? When is it available? October 22nd?
Close. October 19th.
Okay.
Yeah. It'll be available on Amazon, at baronfig.com, your local independent bookstores. A lot of really good relationships with indie bookstores through the publisher. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, Amazon's probably the easiest if you don't have a local bookshop. And October 19th, it is officially out. I think there's going to be a few weeks of pre-orders starting October 1st, and there'll be some special little bonuses and stuff like that if you order then. But
I've already got it in my calendar, so I'm pumped. I am so excited for this.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Yeah, of course. I have my three safe haven style questions. You ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
What are you most proud of?
Ooh. Trusting the journey.
What would you like to be known for?
Oh, that's an easy one. The question guy.
The question guy. I love it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if you had a message for everyone listening, what would it be?
Oh, that for anyone that's trying any of this stuff, any of these practices, just be kind with yourself and, you know, enjoy the process, enjoy the journey and be open and try new things, but be kind. We're so hard on ourselves in so many different ways that we deserve better. Yeah.
Mark, this was amazing. Where can people find you online?
The easiest place is behindthehuman.com. I'll have everything about the book there as well. And the podcast is there and the socials. I'm accessible. Shoot me a message. I would love to know, you know, the questions that you're reflecting on that have helped you most in life. I'm a bit of a geek when it comes to questions. Mm-hmm. I have a spreadsheet of thousands of them over the years. So, you know, I'm a collector of questions. So shoot them this way.
The question guy.
The question guy.
Okay. This was fantastic, Mark. Thank you.
And thank you.
Mark, you are a legend in the making, and I am so happy that we've connected and remain in contact. I cannot wait to get my copy of Personal Socrates and wish you nothing but the absolute best moving forward as an author. This is just the beginning. To everyone listening, I recognize the privileges that come with my platform, and I'm committed to creating a safe, brave, and inclusive space with intention. If this episode has hit you right in the heart or inspired you in any way, which I'm sure it has, please screenshot the screen while you're listening, send it to your friends, and share it in your Instagram stories. Please be sure to tag us at the Safe Haven Podcast so we can personally thank you for it. If you're able to write a review or leave a juicy 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, that really helps this podcast grow. For more great podcasts, check out frequencypodcastnetwork.com, and I will talk to you next week.